Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Hey guys, I have to tell you about this all-in-one shake that I'm freaking loving. It's called Cachava. I love saying it. It's actually hands down the best thing that I've found to help me get all my essential nutrients into one day. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics. In other words, literally everything that your body craves to feel your best. And I know what you're thinking. Something that good for me cannot possibly taste good. Wrong. That's where Cachava really earns their over 52,000 five-star reviews. It actually tastes freaking amazing. It's very creamy and smooth, and it comes together with just water. And it comes in five delicious flavors. Personally, vanilla and chai are my personal favorites, but it also comes in chocolate, matcha, and coconut acai, which I still need to try. Some people like to drink it as part of a healthy breakfast or lunch, and other people love it as a protein-packed snack before or after a workout. It's really perfect for that because it has 25 grams of plant protein per serving. Personally, I like to add mine to my overnight oats. I add a scoop and I mix it all up to get a little more protein into my oats. And literally, I can have that for breakfast and feel satiated, nourished, beautiful, functioning, all throughout my day. It's incredible. Please send me more of it because I love it so much. It makes me feel very, very good. And guess what, guys? Cachava is offering our listeners 10% off for a limited time. Just go to cachava.com/morbid, spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/morbid. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the US with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the US? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. I love Fast Growing Trees because Drew and I love gardening and stuff like that, but we always forget to run our little errands on the weekend where we go to the nurseries and say, I'd like that tree over there, please. But instead, I can just sit my booty on the couch, type in fastgrowingtrees.com, and get whatever plant I want. I just recently ordered a lemon tree because, mama, when life gives you lemons, you can make lemonade and lots of delicious lemon-flavored desserts, which I'm excited about. And it's going to get to my door in 1 to 2 days, and then I'll have so many lemons. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code MORBID at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code MORBID at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code MORBID. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Hey, weirdos, I'm Ash.
And I'm Elena.
And this is Morbid.
Very special Morbid.
This is a super special Morbid, and I'm so we just got off the phone with a very special guest. Yes. And I'm like hyped that we got to do this.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It was. So in episode 214, we covered the case of Molly Bish. Molly Bish was a 16-year-old lifeguard who, on the morning of June 27th, 2000, was essentially abducted from her lifeguard post. And really, just honestly, go back and listen to the episode if you need like a refresher or anything like that.
In plain daylight.
In plain daylight, she was abducted from her. It was literally 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, terrifying.
It's so scary. But before we did the episode, I actually reached out to Molly's sister, Heather, who's like very active in trying to solve Molly's case because this is an unsolved case.
Yeah.
So
which
before,
is crazy. It's like 20 plus years later.
It's so crazy. And it's so sad. It's like a very tragic case.
And we're from Massachusetts. So it's like,
right.
I feel like everybody from Massachusetts feels like they have some kind of like personal stake in this case. Like you want to see this And like you'll hear in the interview, we love the Bish family. And I just feel like they are like our family. And yeah. we want this case to be solved
They're
for
like
them.
Like our Massachusetts brethren.
They
so
are.
Before, I mean, I read a ton about Heather before I started or while I was researching the case because she's so involved in trying to figure everything out. So we actually reached out to Heather and said, hey, you know, we're going to cover Molly's case. If you want to come on the show for like an afterwards kind of interview to tell us about the work that she's been doing to really get this case solved and then tell us what we can do and the numbers that we can call and reach out to help her get this case solved.
Exactly, because this is unsolved, which is nuts.
So I'm so stoked that Heather was willing to do that and she joined us for an episode and you guys are going to love this episode.
She's amazing. You're all going to fall in love with
Heather. Bish is an icon, everybody.
She is. And what we talk about a lot in this, I just want to put it out first so mm-hmm. that everybody can like start Googling it while it's beginning because it's important, is she's really starting to try or starting. She's really in the deep in the process
in the meat
of trying
it.
To push forward the bill, which is S-1595 in Massachusetts, and she will, I'll let her explain in the episode what it's all about. It's basically to help push forward DNA that was found in Molly's case and also can help in other cases for rape kits. It has tons of implications. So go look that up real quick before the episode starts because I think you're going to want to know what's in there.
Yeah, definitely. And then after the episode is over, whip out your cell phone and just start calling everyone we said to call.
Yeah, we'll take a look at the show notes. I'll make sure I put all the information in there for you guys to so we can get this case solved. It's time.
It is.
It's time for Molly and it's time for the Bishes.
It's time for this all. So I think without further ado, here it is.
Enjoy, guys.
Well, thank you so much, Heather, for coming on the show. We're honestly really honored to have you as a guest, and we appreciate you even taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, that's so kind. You guys are really, I'm appreciative with what you're doing and sharing these stories and sharing Molly's story, especially, you know, that's so important, especially with these older cases. I mean, this podcast phenomenon has just been so interesting to me, and I'm just like cheering all of you guys on the sidelines. Just I love it. For every case that's getting pieces of information coming forward or even arrests happening, I'm just in awe of the work of all the creators that are out there really sharing these stories. So I am honored.
Oh, thank you so much. That was so sweet.
We were both just sitting there like, oh my god. Thank you.
Already off to a wholesome start.
I know, right? Well, like you were saying, this case, Molly's case specifically, it captivated, the nation.
Yeah.
It captivated everyone. And we got requests to cover Molly's case from all over the world. Like, before we covered it, people were like, please cover this case. And we were always waiting to do it because we wanted to do it really right because we're from Massachusetts, too. So we were like,
we felt like a connection
to
this.
Yeah, we feel like this is like one of our family members because, you know, here in Massachusetts, we're all just like feeling like we're one. So we were like, we got to do this right. And I think when that happens, it can be, it can be great because like information is getting out there. People are behind this case, wanting to solve it, wanting to move it forward. But I imagine it must be kind of hard too, in a way, for family members because you have memories of Molly as a sister. Your brother has memories of Molly as a sister. Your parents have memory of Molly as a daughter. She was a lifeguard. She was a friend. She was a person. She's not just Molly Bish, the murder victim. And I think sometimes that can get lost in translation, which I imagine can be kind of difficult for you guys at times.
It is. And, I think there's some, I don't know. I think when there's like a benefit of being able to talk about Molly, I think when you lose someone you love, whether it's a sibling or a spouse or your best friend, people can kind of get weird and they don't want to say anything. And sometimes they'll even avoid walking down the same hallway as you, just to not be in that awkward position. And I think, people don't get a chance to talk about the person that they loved, and sometimes people are afraid to bring it up because, that loss was so sad and so devastating. But having the chance to talk about Molly, and share, the work that we do is really a reflection of Molly's love and her love for the world and people, and it's kept us going. And I guess that is a really special privilege of all this craziness and all the ugliness, is that we do get to talk about my sister and think about her and share how our special memories and our moments of joy and how we were proud of her. And I mean, sometimes my brother and I will, you know, have conversations after we, you know, I do these podcasts or there's a, you know, a news article or something, and we'll talk about like, what do you think she'd be like, or who would she still be friends with from her friend group, or what would she think of this particular situation, or you know, and then, you know, it's kind of, you know, fun for us to do that, to imagine what our life would be like to have her with us still, because we miss her. I mean, that loss is still felt every single day. You know, I miss calling her when something good happens. I really miss her on my birthday. I hate my birthday without my sister. It's still awful 20 years later. She should be there with me. And every year that I have to face without her, it's like, you know, ripping that scab off and bleeding again. So it's hard, but there is, you try to, I guess, when there's hard things, always look for, those moments that offer, you know, the good, and try to embrace that, because I don't know how we would survive all this terrible stuff in the world if we didn't.
Seriously. I can't even imagine trying to navigate this whole entire thing, you know,
on top of everything else in the world. So,
right.
So hard.
You have such a healthy way of looking at it.
Coping, yeah.
That I think a lot of people would have trouble doing.
And we plug mental health and taking care of our emotional health right now, and be not afraid to go to therapy for 20 years.
Absolutely.
Because it's so important to continue to unwrap how you're responding to the world and how your family culture sort of trained you to respond to the world, and how, you know, you either want to continue that or maybe think about a different way of doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're Irish Catholic over here, so we know all about that.
Yeah, we grew up in a big Irish Catholic family, so
we're like, maybe we should talk about our feelings.
Right. Oh, I love the generation. I work at a college, so I have the privilege of working with the younger generations, and I just love how they're growing up so much more inclusively and talking about feelings. Yes. And I just think it's going to make a better world someday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Absolutely, for sure.
I know, and it's really up to us at this point to teach the younger generation how to do that, because I think our parents' generation was like right at that point where they were like kind of ready to tell us to talk like about our
feelings. The line.
Right.
It gets better each time.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, going off of that, what is like one thing about Molly from a sister's perspective that you want people to know about Molly, or even like a specific memory that you guys have together that makes you smile?
I think I always talk about Molly's love for the world. Molly loved people. She loved animals. She loved babies. She loved being outside, the sunshine, a beautiful day, getting an ice cream cone. She loved living. She loved life. She loved being a part of what was happening around her. And I think, you know, when I think about Molly, and I guess I'm always most proud of how she welcomed people. When she had an art class, she had some special needs students in there. And I always tell the story of how she would write them a note and kind of like encouraging them to be a part of the class and welcoming them and making them feel at home, because they weren't in the other classes with the rest of the students. They were in like a sub-separate classroom. And, you know, just her empathy and her ability to think about other people, that thoughtfulness. And I try to carry that out with me in my life and think about different perspectives and turn things over all the time. And because of my sister, and she was my baby sister, but that's what she taught me in my life. And, you know, I hope that people know that the work that we do is for, because of that, because Molly cared so much about people. She cared so much about the world and, you know, making people feel safe and comfortable in their environment. And that's sort of, you know, the premise of everything that we want to see happening. And, you know, I guess when you have a case that's 20, almost 21 years old, you're like, where is this guy and has he hurt other people? And you guys explore all these various cases and you know there's a lot of bad guys out there. There's a lot, and it's so scary. And you can go from, you know, being a narcissist to a murderer in, you know, a short time.
Right.
And again, you know, that mental health is so important. But, you know, I think just trying to, you know, live in a way that we're trying to make the world safer because of Molly. And so, you know, recently I've been working on this familial DNA legislation in Massachusetts, which they have in like, I think 14 other states. And it's just really just a process to test the DNA or unidentified DNA from an older case or an older, you know, maybe a rape case or a murder, and be able to have a larger sort of, I call it a net to sort of get the bad guy. And, you know, we have this CODIS system that has all of our felonies in their DNA profiles, theoretically. I know you guys know this.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. No, go ahead, though. Yeah. Because this is Bill, is it S-1595?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because we were going to ask you, like, by all means, tell us as much as you can about that. Because we want everybody to know about that.
Yeah. So it just really, what it does is it allows law enforcement to put this unidentified DNA forward into CODIS again and test for a partial match or a familial match. So it might, you know, touch on someone 56% or 37%, but that will lead investigators to say, someone in this family committed this rape or committed this murder, and they can go back to the drawing board and sort of figure out where the players were in that family that day.
Narrows the field, like, unbelievably.
And what's interesting to me that I found out is that 50% of the people in CODIS have a relative in CODIS. So
it's so funny because I came across that too, and it shocked me. I know, that's a high number.
But then I thought, like, okay, well, there's a lot of teachers in my family. That's my family culture. And I guess if, you know, you're in a family culture that, you know, rapes or molests each other, that's going to continue.
Yeah.
And so they're more likely to have, you know, people getting arrested in the same family network that are experiencing that trauma. I mean, we all know that these behaviors aren't, you know, coming out of the blue. Most people are turning to crime and these horrific things that they do to other people because of trauma.
Nurture is a huge part of it.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a sad societal number story for us. But if we look at it in a law enforcement perspective or a victim perspective, those are odds I'd put money on at a casino, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, seriously. For real.
We're going to get the bad guy. And we're using science. And it hasn't, you know, identified the wrong person. You know, it's actually used by the Innocence Project in Michigan as a way to exonerate people. So really, it's just for this bill, it's just setting up a protocol in how we would do it in Massachusetts. And I'm just really, really hopeful that, you know, we can get this through. We have about an 8,000 rape kit backlog in Massachusetts. So
yes,
we really need to get on top of what's happening forensically in our state. I mean, we're leaders with MIT and WPI. There's no reason. We're cranking out forensic scientists in Boston, and they're all leaving the state. We need to, you know, sort of put some resources together for our forensic, I think.
Absolutely. Lab. Definitely. Yeah, we need to nourish this. We have it here. We're building it here. We need to nourish it here.
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, we have a lot of, you know, Worcester County alone has 40 to 60 unresolved cases.
That's so crazy. So sad.
They go back to the 50s, and, you know, technology might be able to identify this by now, you know. So it's just, I think it's just so important to use what scientific, you know, resources are available for law enforcement. I mean, in today's society, I mean, there's, you know, good cops and bad cops, just like everything, good teachers and bad teachers. And
of course,
we want to give the good police officers all the tools available to get those bad people off the street. So, you know, there aren't rapes. There aren't 8,000 rapes happening.
Yes. Because I think that's one of the huge things about this is this bill can not only help cases like Molly's and families, you know, that are going through the same thing that you're going through, but this can, those rape kits that are sitting on the shelf, it's like this just can get rapists there. Off the street. Like, this is something everybody should be invested in and everybody should be behind.
Absolutely.
100%. And, you know, some of these rapes are violent.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I keep trying to stress, and I know I'm preaching to the choir with you guys, but, you know, it's a hair's breadth away when someone commits one crime to go to the next level.
Of course.
Or, you know, is in a state of sort of paranoia or psychosis to go, you know, further, deeper. I think we just, you know, we need all our tools available.
Absolutely. Because some of these can connect to more violent, you know,
offenders.
Offenses. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, somebody raped someone and they could have escalated to something else and we have no idea.
Right.
Yep. Exactly.
Do you think? Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I'm just really hopeful this time that it'll go through, because we started this about 2 years ago. I had talked to my law enforcement detectives, and they had asked that, you know, Heather, if you want to work on something, we could really use this familial DNA. And I had no idea what it was at the time. I'm just like, okay, let's do
like,
it.
Sure, you're like anything. let's go for it.
You know, being in Massachusetts, they're like, every other state has done this as a policy. And Massachusetts is like, nope, we want a law. And
so it's frustrating.
Thanks, Mass.
But I'm like, I will climb every mountain. I will scream from the mountaintop until I get this guy. And I don't care how far it takes me, I am bound and determined. And, you know, now it's, you know, when you're in that club, you know, that everybody talks about that nobody wants to belong to like this, you know, you really start caring about all these other victims, particularly the ones at attention. Like, I constantly talk about Patty Gagne, who was murdered in Worcester. Her brother found her the next day. You know, people didn't search for Patty like they did for Molly. You know, she didn't get the national attention that Molly has gotten. And, you know, I just hope that maybe this will help solve Patty Gagne's case, too.
Absolutely.
She's important as all these other victims that I've seen on the news and in podcasts. And, you know, so... Yeah, we're all in this together, and you know, I'm just really hopeful that this will go through this time, because we, during COVID, it kind of fell apart, and I was on the Mass Missing Persons Task Force, so we were kind of looking at legislation that was floating around in Massachusetts and trying to put a report together to encourage the legislators to just pass this kind of no-brainer stuff.
Yeah.
And they said, why don't we send your bill, Heather, over to the Forensic Oversight Committee? And, you know, being an educator, I'm like, yes, I am used to working with, like, you know, when I have a problem, I'm working with the autism specialist and the, you know, the fourth grade teacher. And, you know, we're all kind of coming up with something together. And I literally did this bill myself. So I, you know, a special ed teacher, not a forensic scientist.
You're like, but here we go.
You're like, I am putting on another hat.
Seriously. So it worked out really well, because they provide the feedback where we were able to edit the bill really to fit our logistical, you know, structures and systems in Massachusetts. And I think it's going in really strong. And I've been spending probably the last 2 months calling legislators and just asking them to support this. And, you know, most of them will see me or see me over Zoom. And have been really supportive, but, you know, some of them won't meet with me because I'm not in their jurisdiction. So I've been trying to start doing TikToks and whatever media I can use to sort of get people who are in, you know, just people to reach out to their legislators and ask them to support this bill and be the voice that I can't be in their jurisdiction to possibly get this passed. You know, it's just, it's important for victim families, it's important for law enforcement, and it's most important for the justice for all these victims that we have.
100%, definitely. Is there anything else that people can do, like people listening, other, like call legislation, obviously?
Yeah, I would say that would be the most important thing. If people could call their legislators and just ask them to support S-1595, in Massachusetts, and We have a list of legislators on our website.
Oh, great.
MollyBish.com. So people, if you don't know who your legislator is or turned over, you know, things are kind of crazy this year with COVID. Yeah. Who knows who's who or what's
exactly.
What.
But that's good you have that right there for people to find.
And we'll put that, the link in our show notes for this. So people will have all the places they can go.
Yeah, and we can even post like a picture of it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think this is like huge. Like we are fully like, yes, let's do this.
When we stepped into this case and just kind of started going through everything, I think because we are sisters, it almost gave us that extra edge that like, we want to help you. We feel so connected to this.
Yeah. It felt like Molly was like, we felt like your family reminded us so much of
our
family, our big Massachusetts family. Like we just, your parents just like, I remember us in the episode, we're just like, oh my God, I just love this family and I want them to get justice so badly.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel like that's, you know, Molly's love shining down somehow.
Yeah.
When I started this, it's so interesting. There was like a little article in the Cape Cod Times. I live out here in Cape Cod now. And this man emailed me from California. His name is Rock Harmon, and he's actually this DNA expert that travels the world training law enforcement and prosecutors and defense attorneys on using DNA and the different tools in DNA. And I don't know who I'm talking to, but he was very nice and really coaching me and helping me really understand the science part, which was really imperative for me to do this.
Huge.
So turns out he was a former prosecutor on the O.J. Simpson case.
Oh, wow.
And he just so touched by, you know, what had happened in that case that became sort of a mission for him.
I love that.
You know, retired in California, and he's been, you know, sending me articles and explaining things for me, going to meetings with me, talking to district attorneys to explain the little nuances between like YSCR profiles and familial DNA and what is this, what are these little differences. So he, you know, to me, those are like when Mr. Roger talks about look for the helpers.
Yes, look for the helpers.
Yes.
That's the helpers, and those are the things you hold on to in life and remember all the good and the good people that are still out there, because we're much stronger than you know, these people who are really sick and committing horrific acts.
Right. And there's been a lot of people of interest, it seems, over the course of the past 20 years. Is there anyone on the suspect list that, or anyone on as a person of interest that you think is a good candidate for this? Or do you think that it's someone we maybe even haven't looked at yet?
Yeah, I wish, you know, I wish I could just feel like, you know, that sisterly connection, that's the guy. But there's so much circumstantial evidence.
So much.
You know, some particular people that have been out there in the media. And, you know, there's always that wild card that, was this just someone that happened to go smoke a cigarette before he went to work, or after he dropped off, you know, his mother at an appointment or something, and saw this lifeguard there and then came back the next day and grabbed her? I've never really been able to identify the guy in the white car. He's never come forward. So could he be Rodney Stanker? Could he be Gerald Bastoni? Could he be any of the number of other people that have been brought up?
Right.
Possibly, because we know witness, you know, testimony is kind of tricky. And my mom, you know, saw the guy, but, you know, it's hard to say that's the guy. That's definitely the guy. They all look like the guy.
Yeah, they all do in some specific way. It's true. It must be so frustrating, too, because I'm sure you get this really giant feeling of hope every time a new person is introduced.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I do. And, you know, you try to make sense of who would, how would they exist after, and who could possibly do this after 20 years and just fit, you know, what are they doing now? I mean, that's, I think, what gives me the most anxiety is, where is this guy and what is he doing? If he's in jail, great. If he's dead, great. If he's one of those two guys and he's either dead or in jail, then okay. But
right.
I don't know. And so it's hard to rest, you know.
Oh, I can't when imagine. You
know that. And, you know, I wish I could know. We talked to psychics. I mean, when Molly first disappeared, I had an 11-month-old baby, and I would have her on my hip, and I'd be running through the woods with these psychics. And, I mean, I didn't know if I was going to find my sister's body or something, you know. It was so terrifying, but you didn't know what to do, and you're just trying to do something. But, you know, no one's ever been able to say exactly and point me to the evidence. I mean, I've worked with some really, really great psychics, I think are, you know, meaning well and authentic, but still have not been able to break down, you know, who did this. And you know, so I've tried every avenue for sure. I mean, we've put up billboards, we've taken out ads in newspapers, we've I've put up posters in 351 towns in Massachusetts, and you know, I've actually hired producers to document a YouTube movie video. So that I could keep my, you know, parents' story and sort of a summary on the story and be able to share it because of the time lapse and people not, you know, necessarily remembering what happened.
Right.
So, you know, we've tried everything and you know, the results of the familial searching and across the country are just so phenomenal and really hopeful. And, you know, that even the genetic genealogy work they're doing, I'm just so hopeful that Massachusetts will really grab onto that and demonstrate, you know, the leadership that they should be having in this field, I think.
Yeah, because it does feel like it's like right could there. Be in there. Like it could be hidden in there somewhere. Why are we not doing this?
I mean, the stuff they're doing in California is so
unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, we have this controversy right now with these YSCR lists, some of the district attorneys are keeping what the forensic lab in Massachusetts is calling rogue lists, but I would probably just call them unregulated.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they would get like a profile back. You know, they might get a crime scene DNA, or sometimes they're even using voluntary DNA. But they're, you know, putting it through the lab. It doesn't have a hit, and they're keeping the profile separately. I'm not really supposed to do that, but they're saying nothing, saying that they can't do that. And Bristol County was able to solve a case with Plymouth working together on that. The thing is, YSCI only gives you father son profile, so it's a little more limiting.
Oh, okay.
If I was in charge of the world, or the, you know, you do the first CODIS search, right? And then you do the familial, because that's going to catch the wire net. You actually don't need the YSCR profile if you do the familial, kind of negates it.
Oh, that makes sense. Right.
Yeah. So, but I mean, if they're not in CODIS, there's value to it if it's regulated. Orange County uses it in California, and they basically will, like, let a guy off on a misdemeanor if he gives them their DNA, and then they catch them for a rape, you know, 3 months later. I mean, they're dealing with probably a different population, you know, gang life out there and stuff, but you know, it's an effective tool, and certainly has demonstrated to be effective here. And I think that maybe is just maybe a separate bill that needs to be put forward differently. But I always try to, like, explain it, because, you know, it's on the news, and sometimes the reporters don't go into the whole story of what's really happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get why the DAs are doing it. Again, they want to solve these 8,000 rapes that are backlogged at the lab. They're definitely committed to getting the bad guys off the street. It's just, you know, again, I think we just need to update our 22E law and make these, you know, changes to our protocols so that we can do these tests and, you know, have these tools and see what happens.
Definitely. One of the things that we actually talked about in our episode was at the old sawmill campground that you guys used the ground penetrating radar. And I didn't really see any update on that after like 2018. Was that did anything like useful come of that or anything at all?
Oh, no, that was a good one. So I, you know, have have worked with a number of different private investigators over, you know, since I guess when my father had a stroke, I kind of took over the investigation in 2007. Mm-hmm. So I worked with a couple different ones, bringing different people forward. We had a volunteer in our foundation who, you know, was volunteering in 2003 when she was getting her degrees in criminology and forensics and stuff like that. She ended up getting a doctorate and moving back here, a few years before that ground penetrating car thing happened. And she was trying to help me because I'm like running out of ideas. Okay, I put up, you know, posters, I put up ads, I put up, you know, all these things. What else can I do? And so we came up with an idea of doing a tip campaign, and she was going to use her students from college where she taught to collect the tips, and then we sort of organize them and then present them to the police. And so that's how this third person of interest sort of came forward, that she sort of identified through these, this tip campaign. Because of that, she felt really strongly that there was a car in this campground. So she arranged with someone from the University of Connecticut to come out and use this ground penetrating radar. However, our state police were not involved in it. And I was at my daughter's, she was just starting college orientation. And so we were, you know, I wasn't available, and it turned into sort of this media circus. And I was kind of upset because it was supposed to be like, you know, I like to work with the police. I recognize all the issues. I literally have a book ready to publish on my relationship with the police and how it's impacted my life.
Oh, wow. But, congratulations on writing a book. That's huge.
I got a couple edits to do. But, you know, I still try to work with them. I try to encourage best practices and have the hope that this institution is going to, someday get the concept here.
That's great.
So if I could say that lightly enough, but yeah. So I was kind of upset that she, you know, had it turn out this way. And so I was like, let's cease and desist. I don't want to do this anymore. And she just kept pushing. She ended up having a press conference without our knowledge, acknowledgement. So it really, and I was like, you've crossed my boundaries now.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Let's stop this now. And so I never found out what happened with the car. I'm certain that the police could get that information. And they were so irritated and so close to like charging her that it never, so I don't think that there's anything to the campground or the car.
Okay, that makes sense. That's so frustrating.
And then she wrote a book after.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
That is not okay.
But you know what she did? It would have been fine if she had done like a case study on Molly.
Yeah.
Again, she had the education to do that. But she put my parents' speeches into the book and like put herself into our story. Like she was part of our life.
That honestly Molly. Like gives me like a pit in my stomach.
Yeah, I was going to say my stomach just
That's
flipped.
That's so gross.
Literally, like, she wrote letters to Molly in this book. Like, if you read this book, holy smokes.
Hate that.
That's the thing that's frustrating. Like, to go through that.
Yeah.
Very betraying, very violating.
Yeah, that's the thing. Violation is what it feels like.
Right.
Yeah, very, very much so. That's where that went. So, I'm kind of just doing this on my own, but so appreciative of these, you know, podcasts updating about the case and, you know, the work that we're trying to do to keep it going. And, I'm not sure what I'll have to do after this bill, but I'm sure there's more work to be done to, support these cases. I was talking to a producer the other day and I said, if I told you, that I was in a relationship with someone who, you know, gaslighted me and projected and and I kind of gave her some specific situations that had happened, and she's like, I would say you're in an abusive relationship. And I said, what if I told you that was a state police and it wasn't a man?
Oh my god, that was the perfect way to do that.
That's awesome.
No, the drop.
Like, yeah. Oh. Like, yeah. She's like, hold on a sec.
Does that change things or?
Right. And I told her, I said, and then I'm a white woman with a sister who's blonde and blue eyed. And we know those cases get more attention.
Yeah.
And I have a doctor. I'm educated. And I'm still treated this way.
So yes, how I imagine. And
my father was in law enforcement. He was a probation officer. Right. So there's a little, you know, they're a little nice about my dad. But, you know, if they're treating me this way, how do you think they're treating Patty Gagne's family?
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
That's, I think, for probably a lifelong work that all of us victim family members mm-hmm. are pushing and sort of trying to figure out how to, you know, get our points across and get them to understand our perspective without being sort of labeled the crazy victim family member.
Of course. You know? Right. Well, and I feel like that's something we can all take from Molly and who she was and who, you know, you knew her as and who everyone who knew her as, which is like empathy, caring yes. about the world, caring about other people, like
putting yourself in somebody else's
this
shoes.
This is what everybody should be learning is like, it's not just about mine. It's about everybody else's right. too.
You know what? It's like be Molly in art class.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That should be everybody's thought.
It should.
I love it.
I'm so happy you shared that with us. That made me honestly like choke up a little bit.
I know.
That's great. Oh, thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. One of the other things that we had spoken about in our episode, and I was just curious as to your opinion on this, is the Holly Perinen case. I know it's like heavily compared to Molly's case, and some of the suspects or persons of interest were looked at in both cases. Do you think that maybe those cases are connected, or what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that there is certainly lots of room to look at the connections. I think that's really incredibly important, but I don't necessarily think it's the same person. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, my father used to say, if you lay down with dogs, you're going to get fleas.
Yeah.
watch who your friends are, right?
Absolutely.
So I kind of think that there's a group out in that area. Again, these generational traumas, you know,
yep.
same kind of history of violence, history of family violence, history of beatings, history of molestations, history of, you know, Uncle Marion, the cousin, sister, brother, you know, like that kind of stuff. And they're all connected in these weird ways. And that's the stuff I talk to the detectives about, because I'm like, do you understand this? I know when I walk into your office, it's not going to be like, you know, like the TV shows where you've got all the guys and the strings connecting people. And, you know,
we always like talk that. About that.
Literally don't even have data systems that talk to each other barely.
Right.
So to even look up a guy, you know, that from a while ago is difficult for them. And then to get the larger perspective of, sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I have a dog too, so I get it.
Dogs and Zoom. And so to have those nuances and know that this guy was best friends with this guy, or their cousins, or they used to, I don't know, ride motorcycles together. Like, those little nuances, I'm afraid, are missed.
Yeah.
They don't know. They're not from, you know, Warren, Massachusetts, or Sturbridge, Massachusetts. So you don't necessarily know that, you know, and I'm making these names up, the Smiths are related to the Johnsons or whatever. Like, they don't have that kind of network information. So that's the stuff I'm afraid gets lost. And those are the key pieces that I think could possibly show that there's a tie in between Holly and Molly's case.
Yeah.
I mean, different, you know, ages, different situations and mm-hmm. how they were abducted, certainly different times. And again, I keep trying to say, I mean, I think it's so easy to want to believe that it's one bad guy killing all these girls in a specific area. The sad reality is that there's a lot of different bad guys and they're all killing different girls. Or
exactly. It's like indicative of like a darker pathology as a whole,
right?
In the community, you know, that
like a subculture
isn't looked at.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. And that's what's so scary, and that's why it's so important to continue to look for ways to protect, you know, our children and our women and, you know, our society and, you know, sharing your stories and working on legislation and encouraging the mental health component, I think are just, you know, such important pieces to continue to talk about and discuss and provide reasons why.
You know? Definitely. Exactly. I think
Go ahead.
I was going to say real quick, I think one of the really transformative moments for me was when that little girl, and I don't know if you remember, last maybe 2 years ago now, there was a little girl abducted in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yes.
And they Amber Alert, and she was recovered. I mean, albeit that she had been through some pretty bad trauma, but she was recovered alive. And I called my mom and I said, Mom, that was your thing. Because we always, when we started the foundation, we were always like, we don't know if we're really helping. You know, we don't know if we're saving children. Like, there's no, you know, data system saying, oh, this kid wasn't abducted because, you know, Maggie Bish helped bring Amber Alert to Massachusetts or started this in Children's Day or, you know, started talking about child identification kits. So when that happened, and my mom did work on the Amber Alert law coming to Massachusetts and talked Ted Kennedy into signing that bill. And so I felt like she needed that. She needed to know that that little girl had been saved because of her work and her efforts. And I think if we continue to do things like that, you know, other little girls will be saved. And you know, maybe we won't have to, you know, experience these kinds of tragedies and traumas anymore. And again, if we continue to look at trauma and understand it and try to support people through it, you know, maybe things will look differently for everybody.
Absolutely. I think that's like the main message there, right there.
Right.
And also your family is, there's, you are such badasses.
You like have that, done such incredible work, all of you together.
It's unreal.
Oh, thank you. I mean, again, I think it's just, you know, an outlet to love my sister and, you know, share that love. And that's really all you can do when you're faced with something like this.
Yeah, no, it really is. I think kind of just to end all of this, what is one last thing you can tell us all that we can do to help you and your family get Molly's case solved?
Well, I think the best thing anyone could do right now is to go on mollybish.com and find their Massachusetts legislator, and if they're in Massachusetts, and reach out to him or her and ask them to support S-1595 to be passed this year. If you're not from Massachusetts, you know, continuing to share Molly's story, continuing to share the results of familial DNA analysis across the country. I mean, right now we only have about 14, 15 states that have it, and there's 50 states in this country. So we really get on this, because there's certainly Molly's case, and you know, isn't the only case. I mean, whether it's friends in Minnesota and Florida who have experienced equally traumatizing abductions in their family, and you know, having these tools are important for all of us to have in this country and to keep us all safer.
Absolutely. And I think I want to encourage everyone to go to the Molly Bish Foundation webpage, which we're going to link all of these things in the show notes so everybody can get to all of this. Also, if you want to read Bill S-1595, I'm going to link where you can read that too, because you can go on the masslegislator.gov website to find it. But I think it's important. Everybody should know that this is like so far-reaching. This is so necessary. It's so important that this bill goes through. So everybody give your support.
Yeah, as a true crime community, everybody. Let's come together and get this done.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. And everything you shared was just like so eye-opening. Thank you.
Yeah, it really was. This was such an awesome conversation.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I just really appreciate you guys and your support and your dedication and, you know, being from Massachusetts.
Thank you so much.
And we'll absolutely stay in touch. And if anything else comes up that we can do to help, like, we really want to help work with you.
Yeah, we feel like very strongly about this case, about you guys, your family, about Molly. We would love to push this forward in any way we can.
Awesome. Thank you so very much. I will definitely stay in touch.
Absolutely. You are welcome anytime here. Yeah.
You have our number now, so text us anytime or call.
Any updates, we'll have you right back on.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Heather.
Take care.
You too.
Bye.
So we hope you guys enjoyed that episode.
Yes.
I think it was awesome. And you can go to the mollybishfoundation.com, or excuse me, mollybishfoundation.com to contact your legislators and ask them to support Bill S-1595.
Yeah, and we'll put all that in the show notes. So just look at where you look at the details for the episode, and we'll have all the links in there that you can follow. But do it. I think it's good for everybody. It's going to benefit us all. So
it is. And thanks again to Heather for joining us.
Thank you so much, Heather. You were a gem.
So guys, we hope you keep listening.
And we hope you
keep
it
weird. But that's everything you don't call about Bill S-1595. Woo!
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In May of 1980, near Anaheim, California, Dorothy Jane Scott noticed her friend had an inflamed red wound on his arm and seemed unwell. She insisted on driving him to the local hospital to get treatment. While he waited for his prescription, Dorothy went to grab her car to pick him up at the exit, but would never be seen alive again, leaving us to wonder, decades later, what really happened to Dorothy Jane Scott. From Wondery, Generation Y is a podcast that covers notable true crime cases like this one and many more. Every week, hosts Aaron and Justin sit down to discuss a new case, covering every angle and theory, walking through the forensic evidence and interviewing those close to the case to try to discover what happened. And with over 450 episodes, there's a case for every true crime listener. Follow the Generation Y podcast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.